It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the Cals Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio Cals, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org.
Welcome to another episode of Primary Sources. I'm Matt DeCampbell, and our guest today is Pulaski County Treasurer Deborah Buckner. Hi, Deborah.
Good morning, Matt. So good to be here.
Yes, and good to have you here. Deborah and I have known each other quite some time, and I know that she is going to be a very interesting interview, which you would not always necessarily expect from a treasurer, but if you expect this to not be interesting, then you've never met Deborah Buckner. So before we get into your job and all the details with that, let's start with your history, your background. Where'd you grow up? What'd you want to be when you were a kid? What did you do for fun?
I am one of those very fortunate people who was born and reared in Hot Springs, Arkansas, when it was a very small town. I went to Lakeside High School, graduated in 1969, go Rams, still. It was a very Mayberry-ish type of rearing. Grew up in the Methodist Church, sang in the choir, rode my bicycle to elementary school. Very an enviable life to be reared in. My parents were from there, and unfortunately I've lost both my parents, but I have a very special place in my heart for Hot Springs. Ended up attending Henderson University on scholarship. Unfortunately, was in a pretty serious car accident, and have some scars to prove it, but did not finish college, as economics are. Moved to Little Rock to seek my fortune. Went to work at Worthen Bank, for those folks old enough to remember a Worthen Bank. And fortunately found fertile soil and started as a teller, worked my way up, and eventually was a VP over statewide lending and made home loans and spent many number of years there. So for about 20 years, I was in the banking industry.
Okay, I'm gonna back you up a little bit there. So clearly when you were a little girl, you weren't thinking, I wanna grow up and be the tax collector.
Actually, when I was a little girl, and even on through high school and even college, I didn't actually plan to work. That's what's hysterical about the fact that I've worked my entire life. I was going to be the lady with the apron who made cookies and had a garden and canned vegetables and married the boy down the road and had babies and did PTA. However, the boy down the road had another idea when the time came to the altar. Consequently, and he will remain nameless, but he knows who he is, and he's a very successful stockbroker here in Little Rock. However, so my life took a different turn than I had planned initially. Took 4 years of home ec and no business courses. That was where I was headed, right?
Right.
So consequently, I could sew on a button, but I didn't end up graduating college. But the path that your life takes is sometimes unanticipated. Mm-hmm. I think most people would say this is not where I thought I would be. After 20 years in banking, my life took a different course. We had three teenage girls, and I was doing a lot of nationwide traveling. I was involved with as the thrifts were collapsing, I was involved with the closure of many of the savings and loans nationwide. We worked in 41 states. My mother was diagnosed with cancer. I wanted to be home, and so I was looking for the inspiration of some skill sets that I had. I happened to know the prior treasurer, lovely Mrs. Pat Tedford, and I saw in the newspaper that she was not going to seek re-election, and I was 49 years old, so I thought, treasurer, math, banking, money, maybe I can do that. So I called Miss Pat and said, what do you do all day? Well, what is this job? She gave me about a two-sentence answer. And I said, you know what? I can figure this out. Never ran for student council, thought politics and government was horrible, had no respect really for the local processes, but felt led to, after much prayer and thought and family consideration, to come off the road, retire from my career in banking, and run for office. And I did. And amazingly, as a first-time candidate, I won the primary, and then I won against a CPA in the general. So I guess it was meant to be, and the stars aligned, and I found myself walking into a job that I knew absolutely nothing about.
So it sounds like that you still ended up as the woman with the apron making cookies and raising kids. You were just working on top of that the whole time as well.
Well, Gloria Steinem and others said you can have it all.
Yeah.
So I had my babies, and I had my marriage, and I had my church, and I did do PTA. But in the meantime, I was a major breadwinner. I was married for 10 years to a nice person, but we parted ways. So I was a single mom and had two kids to support. And being a bit of an overachiever, I wanted to do well at whatever I was doing. There's a price you pay for trying to be good at everything. Excelling or going up in the years that I did in banking, it was a man's world. I was a bit naive about just do a great job, be the one that the boss wanted everybody to be, just like you, work late, take work home, the weekends, the whole thing, and then you would be compensated and rewarded accordingly. I didn't understand about golf courses and jets and smoking cigars and drinking bourbon at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Wasn't what I was going to be doing. However, through grit, you become recognized eventually, and it's undeniable. So I had a great career in banking and have no regrets, really.
Not going into details about your car accident that you had that derailed your completing college and all that, but knowing a lot of people who have been through various trauma, how did that experience for you kind of change your perspective, or did it change your perspective and your approach to, you know, to life, both personally and professionally?
It was a shock and very painful, and again, scars on my face and embarrassment as a 20-year-old young woman. So it also left me without a vehicle, which was economically horrible. Mm-hmm. My little old rattle trap just was covered by insurance. So I found myself injured, finishing a semester without a vehicle, and kind of had to start over, literally rubbing two sticks together. Mm-hmm. So it gave me the understanding of how difficult it can be. We were a middle American family. We were not a wealthy family. I was the oldest of six children. So for me, it was sort of time for me to go figure out what I could do on my own. And you just take a deep breath and go, I was an A student. I can figure this out. I can walk. I can drive. I can talk. I can be employed. I didn't lose vision. It could have been much worse. And I have a strong Christian faith. So for me, it was one day at a time and keep climbing. Mm-hmm. So it did alter the course of my life. I had planned to be a speech and drama teacher, and because I adored my speech and drama teacher at Lakeside High School. Some people say I'm still a speech and drama teacher in the things that I do, but it did alter the course of my life, and it was a pivotal moment because I found myself really having to go to work. And back then, in the late 60s, early 70s, there weren't as many scholarship opportunities, but there weren't Pell Grants. The opportunities didn't exist then like they do today. So consequently, I had to go to work.
Did that experience feed into your determination later on as you're working through the boys' club atmosphere of of banking, you've pulled through worse, you know, put on your big girl pants and we can get through this?
When you're 5'2", you're constantly pulling on your big girl pants. My parents had been in banking, and so that was kind of a natural progression for me. I knew the field a little bit. But I think you're born with some sort of grit and determination to achieve in general. But when you've really been at the hard scrabble place and you've overcome that, I think you do get not an arrogant mindset, but a determination mindset that you look around at the world and say, if other people can do this, I can do this, mm-hmm. or more. and I was determined to be or more.
So once you became or more, and you walk into the job January 2001, what did you find compared to what you expected?
Mrs. Tedford was a lovely lady, and she had a staff of folks that handled her management style very well. However, in banking and where I came from, everything was competitive. The best of technology, the best phone system, the best of everything. And what I walked into was not that. Consequently, the branch offices didn't have a fax machine. Mrs. Tedford used dictation, or they handwrote memos, etc. I had come from a laptop environment where I wrote my own memos, and my phone didn't even have voicemail in 2001. So I found fertile ground for technology to be enhanced. Mm-hmm. There was a budget. She left me a good budget, and I was able to actually put computers in as opposed to dummy terminals. We got mainframe. Everybody went to World Wide Web School. We got email, fax machines, and you'd think I'd have been Steve Jobs because this looked like something amazing, when really it was sort of dragging the Treasury and the tax office into a more adaptable environment. And the community was changing. The world was changing and demanding, wanting, expecting these types of services from government. And they didn't exist at the time, but there really hadn't been the demand for it. But as we went from 201 and year after year after year, and here we are in 17, there's an expectation that we can pay on our mobile phone or whatever. I was very fortunate to be partnered early on with an aggressive and innovative lady at Information Network of Arkansas. They do an amazing job in Arkansas in technology. And she knew my mindset and that I was eager to do these things. She called me one day and said, would you like to be the first county in America, the entire country, to have mobile phone payment option on your, you know, either app on your phone? And I'm like, well, yes, how fast can that happen? So she met me in the hallway, and over a cup of coffee, she went bingity, bingity, bing. I had no idea what she did, but she showed me how. So we could introduce this to the community, set a tone for other counties in Arkansas. We got a national write-up. You know, I don't need it for my resume, but it was cool to read it, you know. Sure. But the idea was I was open to what might come, and that was free to us. They provided that because, of course, they're fee-based. And the more right. people that pay, the more fees they get. So it's a win-win for her if we're willing to take this on. Now, a very large portion, we've kind of done a demographic thing. Kind of the 45 and under people all pay on their phone. Mm-hmm. So that having that in place and tested and get the bugs worked out has been wonderful. Plus, we ultimately got a website and have tweaked that many times and added the payments online and made it simpler for people. Information Network of Arkansas, of course, is, like I said, fee-based. There's no money that the county charges, but it's a convenience fee. You know, if you go to 7-Eleven at midnight to get beer, it's more expensive than if you're going to Kroger at 3 in the afternoon. So the convenience fee that people pay is something that we still fight. There's a resentment because it has to be listed on their tax bill.
Yeah.
When you go to Brand X Retail, that's a hidden charge. You don't see that listed for $4 or whatever. So we answer that question frequently. But anyways, it's really been fun to watch it evolve.
So you update the office, bring it kicking and screaming into the 20th century, almost 21st century at that point. And then, you've, 9/11 comes in your first year.
Yes.
You have somewhat of a recession after that. Cool. Then you have the tech bubble bursts and everything with that. So how did that add to the challenge on top of what you're already facing, trying to get the office organized?
Well, I'm going to take a little bit of a sidebar on a personal note. In my banking career, I'd worked with many folks in Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And I stood there in my office. We found a television that day, and we watched the second tower come down, and I lost two friends, very close personal friends. So it was very difficult. 2 weeks later, my father died. So in my first year of office, it was pretty traumatic to try to walk into this. And so back to that grit thing, and on my knees, and you know, help me get guidance to go forward on doing what I'm supposed to do with this office and support these citizens and the staff. And moving forward with that, the dilemma that I witnessed from then the folks who had no tools to deal with.
Right.
I found myself very comforted with that, but I also set about a plan to set up a disaster recovery center away from our office and use a little bit of the funding that we save a little bit a year to set up a place that if somebody did something unseemly and our office disappeared, that we could keep collecting tax money, because if we're not collecting tax money, the cities and the schools and Central Arkansas Library, who I'm a huge fan of, Lehman Library, Timber Commission, Children's Hospitals, the county hospital, if I couldn't collect tax money, then that's my fiduciary duty, then these people couldn't get funded. So we went from there to kind of the big game plan. Of course, I've got to get reelected. It's a two-year job.
Right.
So I'm still thinking about, you know, that, and occasionally scrambling eggs for my husband. So that go forwards was a very intense time for us. And I'm very blessed and fortunate that I'm surrounded with a great team. So we move forward from there with what we could learn, not heavily funded, but with some tax money, so that we could go forward. And that coupled with the idea that the tax revenue, there were so many people who chose not to pay. Mm-hmm. And therefore, not only did I need to up the ante for those who didn't pay, but I need to make it easier for those who chose to pay more timely, etc. We innovatively came with an installment program that they could pay any amount they wanted to from the time we opened the books until October. When I came in office, Matt, about 70% of the taxes were paid in October and about 30% from March forward.
Sure.
My banking background told me cash flow management was that we should have a consistent amount of money coming
stretch
every
out.
Month.
Yeah.
Think about it. What if you only got your big pay, you got one paycheck a year from whatever job you have. You get a big check in December and you got to figure out how to live all year. Well, that's almost how on a 70-30 that schools and libraries and everybody else was trying to live. The tax money that came in October basically went to them in December, and they had to figure out how to make that until kind of the next October. Well, that was alien to all my financial background.
Sure.
And like, let's get a consistent cash flow in this joint, okay? So we promoted the installment program. We got the e-checks. We got the credit cards. We promoted it heavily. I got all the press I could to have the public know, listen, don't wait till October and maybe don't pay because you're broke. Pay that $100 a month as we're open or whatever. Get yourself kind of protected from that October gotcha. And it was hard for people. So people on fixed income could pay every month or whatever. So I'm happy to say there was a response in the education with the public. And now we get about 30% in October and we get 70% throughout from March on. So we're able to give, Bobby Roberts called and congratulated me and Jeff Baskin when he was alive. The libraries could see the difference. The hospitals could see it because we were sending more money sooner and they could adjust their budget accordingly. So kind of all that was year 02, 03 mm-hmm. to make those things happen. We had to get a little legislation changed, and actually it's been, I think, a good catalyst for other counties. Some of the larger counties looked at that and went, you know what? We're not stuck in the 1850s on how, we're not an agricultural, you know, state anymore. You don't have to wait till harvest to get the fool's money in. You can give them a chance to pay sooner. So that's kind of where we went. So that brings me up a little bit further into the tenure.
Yeah. And you talked about having to run almost immediately after, because you were in two-year terms at the time.
Right.
What was, when you walked in the door, because again, you had contested elections right out the gate at your first race ever, how long did you expect or think or hope that you'd have the job?
My original plan, believe it or not, was 20 years.
Oh.
Well, I looked up the book. I wanted to be the longest serving female treasurer in Pulaski County history.
Well, there you go.
So I dug out the archives and being, again, goal-oriented, I was 49 years old when I went in office, and I thought, I'm 69, 70 years old. Besides my time in banking, between consulting and all the things I did in banking, was about 20 years. So if you look 20, 25 years, that was sort of, this was going to be phase two for me.
Yeah.
So it was the idea that in the first year, you want to prove you should have the right to return because you've been aggressive and innovative. It still is the concern that the world can change around you, and of course it has very much so
yeah.
since I ran the first time in 2000. But I wanted to earn the job. I wanted to earn the right to come back. I wanted people to believe that I was not going to ride a clock, ride a desk. I wasn't in the tax receipting business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the tax collection business.
Right.
That is a 180 mindset.
Yeah.
And from that paradigm, having been a visible, outgoing, statewide active banker and a Wall Street engaged person and a national person. I taught MBA courses, etc. I wasn't afraid to go meet people and ask for money. So that developed into, as we were finding those folks who chose not to pay, who could pay, defining those folks as a category became kind of a fun adventure for us.
So we officially call them scofflaws, right? Or
deadbeats.
Well, I was going to say, is there an official name? I mean, you know, official governmental name. And then B, was there a lot of fun had trying to come up with alternative names?
Well, you know,
ones you knew you couldn't use.
It's I'm going to use a very clean, G-rated language here.
Oh.
But of course, scofflaws is a word. Deadbeat is a word. Irresponsible citizen. Here's the deal. We all pay a price to have a civilized community and quality government to the best that we can, and they're willing to pay for it. If you're not paying your share, but you are calling the coroner, or you are calling police, or a fire, or community services, if you're taking advantage of all the things that we frankly don't bill you every time you want a service, you pay a small fee for a marriage license or to file a deed, but that certainly doesn't pay to orchestrate the commercial side of having this available to you. So my thought on this is that since it's all public information, and we could have a website 24/7 with all the deadbeats listed every day, all day, and I could call bankers and lawyers and credit unions and say, just go look, see who these people are. I could run lists in Arkansas Times, Arkansas Business, the DG, whomever. I started running lists in the colloquial papers, the Maumelle, the Jacksonville, this type thing. These are the top 10 deadbeats. Do business with them if you want to, but I'm not. I quit going to restaurants. I quit going to dry cleaners. I quit using any facility that didn't choose to support the services. You're taking money from the community by being in business, say, for example, but they weren't paying for the schools that are afforded for their children. So I would begin a education adventure, connecting the dots that the services you paid for come from tax money, and pointing out that if you didn't pay your taxes and you're an ongoing business, you've invited me to your door. I'm going to show up and ask you for payment. So that began a series along the way of site visits, and we took media from time to time, not every time, but frequently we would. But it's a good news story because the world wouldn't know, because there was a disconnect about this. And so we started on what we call theme days. So we would look into a variety of different theme days that we could do. We would choose to do medical. One day we would take the media and go see doctors, dentists, equipment vendors who supplied hospitals. We would have a lawyer day. We would go to large firms, small firms, independent lawyers. So the theme days seemed to take on a mind of their own or a life of their own, because the media, you being a media type would appreciate this, there was a history that could be studied about what's the track record for lawyers or doctors or medical, you know, this type of thing.
Yeah.
So there was a kind of a rope that could be put around that industry. One of the popular ones we ever went to that we did was what we called... in G-rated, we called entertainment businesses.
Oh.
Yes, and those were strip clubs.
Yes.
And sex toys, and a variety of commercial businesses that would support those industries.
Yeah.
That might be the most popular one that we ever did, because, of course, sex sales and non-payment of sex sales, and so that worked really well. And the interesting thing about that was, and is, to date, every time I have ever gone to a business personally, I have always left with the tax payments current.
Started this and decided, and we're looking at the roles and looking at who you needed to go after. Surely, as long as you had lived here, you were coming across some names of friends or people you'd worked around or.
I was so aggravated at some of these fools. I could not believe people I went to church with, etc., etc., people I'd known my whole life. Lots of the bankers, frankly, there were some county employees. There were some elected officials, and old media types like you used to call and say, hey, everybody running for office, who hadn't paid their taxes? they made their own story because they didn't take care of their civic responsibility. So sure, I was offended. I'd always paid my taxes on time. How dare they? Mm-hmm. Over time, it's become a running joke. I can't go to the grocery store or to a restaurant now, and people always walk up to me and say, I've paid, my check's in the mail, et cetera, et cetera. And business owners will say, I've paid. I said, yes, you have, or I wouldn't be here. So, yes, it was offensive to find out that people were deadbeats. And again, this isn't state taxes withheld from their paycheck. This isn't federal taxes. This is local. This is your guy driving a patrol car. You know, this is the fireman showing up when your house is on fire or getting your cat out of a tree. Why would you not want to support? And those aren't high-paid jobs. Those are public servant positions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a real eye-opener.
So then, also, having worked in government for quite some time myself, you have to have been either a part of or at the center of any number of conspiracy theories as the tax collector. And the way that you're laughing, I don't think I need to ask much else about that. I can just let you go.
You know, government employees are not highly paid employees, as you will remember from your time in the administration at the state. I've been accused of being on a percentage of collections. Mm-hmm. I've been offered, frankly, money off the table, under the table. I've been offered equipment. I have been offered services to not reveal, take their name off the website, not put them in the paper. If, you know, it's amazing what people will tempt you or test you with. Mm-hmm. And the amazing moral upbringing that is as tall and wide as I am that my parents instilled in me and the Methodist Church my entire life. It's sort of like being married. I'm the most married person you know. And when it comes to this, I'm the most moral person you know. There, my mom and daddy taught me young, don't ever be tempted to compromise. If your gut says no, it's no. And so there's not a ceiling fan or a washer and dryer, tickets to the hog game, or, you know, free meals here, or a resort there, or whatever. You just, it's like don't ever smoke the first cigarette. Right. If you just don't, mm-hmm. you don't have anything to apologize for. You know, I'm a flawed individual like we all are. But where I'm going with that is, instead of being, have my head turned, because we aren't well-paid employees. I mean, you know, I knew what the salary was. I'm not unhappy about that. But to have your head turned, we read all the time. I have government employees that I've known personally that are currently in jail mm-hmm. because they had their head turned for little money. And we're running about $700 million a year. It would have to be so handsome, but I ain't leaving Arkansas.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to the Bahamas, you know. They don't have the Ozarks there.
No.
So, yes, it's been, and the sly way with which people would try to approach you, or even your staff, people would come and report things to me that they were. On the one hand, you think, is this how they've done business? Have they done this with other government people or whatever? What's their life story? But then you're so offended by it. You think that I'm going to besmirch my career, my name, and my family for, oh, I don't know, a week somewhere? No. So anyway, sure. And that continues.
Well, I was very happy to see you coming, and thank you for being here. Our guest has been Deborah Buckner, the Pulaski County Treasurer. If people have questions or inquiries, what's the best way to find their treasurer's office?
If they want to go to an office, of course, the website lists everything. If you want to make a phone call, it's a very simple local number, 501-340-6040. Very simple. Or, of course, PulaskiCountyTreasurer.net. You can go online. Or ask me at the grocery store. Everybody does.
Okay. This has been another edition of Primary Sources, and we will see you the next time around.
You've been listening to Primary Sources on Radio CALS, a production of the Central Arkansas Library System It's Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley. Production manager is Shelley Stormo. Voices by Jasmine Job and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Anna Lancaster and Shelley Stormo. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell Hoskin and David Strickland. Thank you.